Hi, what's your secret?
Okay, so here's my secret. About a year ago, I started waking up for some reason just like really hungry in the middle of the night. So I get the munchies, I make my way down to the kitchen to start scavenging for food. But along the way, I'm like bumping into the doorknob and the coffee table. And so I'm like bruised and hungry several weeks in a row. So it's like, this is not gonna work. So I'm trying to figure out what to do. And then this solution hit me that I learned from my friend who, you know, you go out having some drinks, you get a little munchies, you know, like kind of pre-prepare a snack for yourself for when you get home. So I thought I'm gonna do that at my house, except on a routine basis. So a couple nights a week, I started preparing a ham sandwich, you know, a little bit of lettuce, some mayonnaise, just everything waiting for me right there on my bedside table. Not gonna lie, it's been a lifesaver when I wake up in the middle of the night hungry. And the double bonus is that I'm not covered in bruises from trying to make my way through the dark in the house anymore. And second, if I make it through the night, I've got a ham sandwich for breakfast waiting right there for me.
Everyone, it's Ben. As the year draws to a close, it's the perfect time to take stock of the valuable experiences we've had and the lessons they've taught us. Over the last 12 months, many people have shared their most intimate stories here in the Secret Room. Secrets they've kept from their loved ones, secrets they've kept from work and from friends. And in many cases, they've come here because it's a place they can set their story free anonymously. And many of my guests chose to share specifically to let people with similar experiences know they are not alone and that they can overcome. Today, we close out the year with some of your favorite street secrets, and then we'll revisit a story of triumph over adversity with a dash of love thrown in for good measure. Tim's hilarious attempt to outsmart the drug test that could sideline his career had you in stitches, and you guys cheered him on all the way. And looking ahead, we're going to kick off next year with a blockbuster. I'll have a preview for you at the end of the show. First up, street secrets.
My secret is a couple years ago at work, I ordered food for myself and some coworkers off of DoorDash, and my boss paid for it. Well, I guess I didn't delete his card off of my DoorDash account, and it turns out I was accidentally ordering food for myself with his card for months, like several months. So he figured out what was happening, and he asked me if it was me. And, you know, being quick on my feet, like I am, I blamed my 12-year-old little sister and said it was her. He totally believed it, and he didn't ask for any money back. And to this day, no one knows it was me. Oh, and yes, I do still work for him.
What's your secret?
So I've sucked my thumb for as long as I can remember.
Okay.
I stopped when I was probably about 27.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did you hide it?
Well, when I was a kid, it wasn't really a big deal. Everybody just accepted it. But as I got older, I just did it at night, or I did it after school when nobody was home. In college, I had 3 roommates. I would hide under my blankets. And I would do it when I was sleeping.
How did you break the habit?
When I had my daughter, my ex told me I probably shouldn't do it around her. That's when I stopped.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Were you ever busted by anybody?
Oh, yeah. Boyfriends, my parents, my brother, all the time.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yeah. And it's funny because if you look at my thumbs, they're like different sizes. Like I wear a size 11 on one thumb and a size 8 on the other thumb.
Is the thumb that you were sucking the smaller one?
Yes.
Do you attribute the smaller size to the sucking?
Yes.
That's hilarious.
My face is all red now.
Yeah.
My secret is, one day my foster mother came up to me and she said, I need your social security card. I said, sure. Which one do you want? She looked at me like I had 3 heads and said, what do you mean, which one? And I said, well, I have 3. And she said, okay, you are only allowed to have 1 social security number. And it is illegal for you to have 3. And you need to get this taken care of before you're 18 because you can go to prison for fraud. She, you know, asked, how in the world did you get all of these social security numbers? And I said, well, my mother filed for one every time I had a new stepfather. And I just thought that was a normal thing. I had no clue at this age that this isn't something you did. So I called Social Security and got it all straightened out. And fortunately, they said that was good before I was 18 because my foster mother was right that I could go to prison for having several identities. So that's pretty crazy. Anyway, turns out my mother did this because she was collecting welfare and different benefits for a total of 5 kids, 3 that she didn't even have. And I stay way far away from this woman.
Hey, what's your secret?
So when I was in community college, I think I was about 19, I really wanted a new pet. I went to an exotic pet store and bought a pet rat unbeknownst to my mother, who I lived with. I had a loft that was built into the walls and it had the little spot that no one could see. And I set up my rat's cage there and didn't tell my mom for about 4 months. I think I just got kind of sick of hiding it. And I just said, you know, hey, mom, you should meet my pet rat. She said, what? And I like, yeah, mom, I know you said you didn't want me to have one. And that would be a pain in the ass for you. But I've had him for about 4 months and you didn't even know. Naturally, she let me keep him because she's not a horrible woman. And I got my pet rat.
20 years ago, when my husband moved to assisted living for the elderly, they told me that he would be checked on overnight just in case anything went wrong. Well, I wasn't so sure that I believed them. I thought I should put it to the test. Overnight visitors were not allowed, so I just stayed late one night and then hid under the bed. It was a tight squeeze because the bed was very low. I took an apple with me in case I was hungry. I was awake all night and I could hear people passing in the hall, but no one ever came in. The next morning, I stayed through breakfast and left like nothing had happened. I never did anything about it, but I knew that if I ever felt something was wrong, I could just stay there and watch over him myself.
So about 5 years ago, my boss was going on and on about what an expert he was in the stock market and how he's making all this money on it and how he could probably quit his job and just become a day trader. I'm no stock whiz, but I knew enough to know that some of his quote unquote winners were in fact dogs, like with the capital D. So aside from how inappropriate it was for him to be offering me financial advice, I was just really annoyed at how much he was bragging, but I couldn't tell him to put a sock in it because, you know, he's my boss. So I found a way to silently get even. Have you ever heard of shorting stocks? That's a way to make money on a stock when it goes down in value. So when he would give me his stock picks, I just shorted them, and I did pretty well. Of course, I never told him, and I quit doing it really fast because it was super reckless, but it was so satisfying. So maybe not wise to follow my lead, but that's my secret.
I'm a home health nurse, and I had this lovely older lady patient who just loved her cat so much. She loved that cat like it was her firstborn. Anyway, this patient had to have surgery. I'm not going to say what for. And she was in the hospital, but she refused to have the surgery unless she could see her cat first. Oh my gosh, you can't imagine the drama it's caused with her and the staff. Cats were not allowed in the hospital, obviously, and they were just at a standstill. So finally, I took her daughter aside and I told her, just get the damn cat and meet me outside. So she puts the cat under her jacket and I told her when to quickly go down the hallway and duck into her mom's room. She opened up her jacket to her mom's complete delight and she got some special feline time with her precious cat. And then meanwhile, of course, I was so nervous we would get busted. I turned people away at the door. Some staff would come by and I'd be like, nope, 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 we're all good in here. Just getting ready. Nope, we're okay. So my patient agreed to the surgery and I got her daughter out and no one was the wiser. It was like the great cat caper of Cleveland and we got away with it. I can't believe it. That's my secret.
I'll be right back with today's main event. It's a must-listen secret for 2022. And now it's time to fall in love with Tim all over again as he relates his harrowing drug test and the measures he took to circumvent it. Many of you commented that this was also a love story the first time we ran it, so listen for that subplot as we continue today's secret room.
Hi, my name is Tim, and my secret is I was a surgeon at a prestigious hospital, but something I did could cost me my new job in health administration.
Hi, Tim. Welcome to the secret room.
Oh, hi, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. It's really, really great to have you here. Your secret sounds really intense, I have to be honest.
It is. It does feel intense and still has.
Wow. So tell us all what your profession is.
So I am mainly a general surgeon, but I typically get on call for trauma surgeons as well.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That's a really big job.
That was a big job.
Yeah. How long were you a trauma surgeon?
So altogether with residency and fellowship, 25 years.
Goodness gracious. How long was the education just to prepare you for the work?
I mean, you have 4 years college, 4 years medical school. You have 4 years of residency, 2 years of fellowship. So what did I eat? It's like more than 12.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So this is something you've just dedicated your whole life to.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It just happens that becomes your life.
Yeah. And so can you tell me a little bit about just your day-to-day life as a surgeon?
Because I've been working for 25 years, the last few years are not similar to the beginning, but I can give you an example of an average day. I would go at 6 o'clock in the morning, have some scheduled surgeries, some unscheduled surgeries, and between them, I'm seeing other patients on the floor or in the emergency room. And if I happen to be on call, I carry the all the night for any new cases or any decompensated cases on the floor. And I will still continue to work the following day, and that will just be a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday combo. That happens all the time.
So you just work nonstop?
I've worked as much as 19 days in a row.
Oh my gosh. And probably with very little sleep.
Yes, very, very little.
Did you ever find yourself sleeping at the hospital?
To answer this question, honestly, I would say I wish that I could just be one of these people who falls asleep in a meeting or whatever. No, I have to be in my bed. And
I think that was probably very good for your patients.
I mean, just to give you a visual.
Yeah.
If I sleep while I'm on call, I'm wearing my scrubs.
Wow.
I have my shoes pointing towards the door. I already have my car key and license in the car. So all I need to grab is my eyeglasses, jump in the shoe, in the car, in less than 30 minutes in the hospital. That's just like regular day.
That's amazing. And that's because people's lives were being held in the balance, right?
Correct.
It could be a matter of life and death if you didn't get to the hospital on time.
People actually say this a lot, but you think about it and it is true for real.
It's a lot of responsibility.
It has. It has.
Did you find it to be stressful?
Oh my God. I feel for every physician, especially the majority who take everything serious, and it's painful.
Wow.
It's painful.
And yet this is the career you chose. And what was it that drew you to the profession? Why did you want to do this?
You want the right answer?
I guess the truth.
The truth is my parents were almost perfectionists. I have two siblings, a sister who became a doctor. She's a pediatrician, followed by a brother who became a lawyer. Then comes me. And I'm like, I guess I have to. So that's how it happened.
So much pressure.
Yes.
If you didn't have the pressure of your siblings, fantastic success that preceded you, what do you think you might have done?
I think I would have picked something like interior designing or something in that department.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Much less stressful.
Exactly.
Wow. If only you could do it all over again.
So you don't like red, we'll do it in blue.
Right.
Big deal.
No problem. To stick with that career for so long, obviously it must have been very rewarding, and you must have enjoyed it also.
It's a roller coaster. It takes you from the top of the world when everything is going right and the patient at the end is perfect and they remember to give you the thank you. That's really is like the height of it. And it takes you all the way down when things are not going the way you want them and it doesn't look good. Oh God, I don't want to even remember these moments. But so you're always up and down, up and down, and you're just trying to get some sleep in between.
If I were to ask you, what's the one thing about the job that you loved, what would you say?
It's really weird for a surgeon to say this, but it was sitting on the couch next to the patient in bed and just seeing them smile and after everything is done and they're really feeling better. Ah, that was it. I never actually told anybody something like this because it doesn't sound like too manly or something. But for real, that was the best reward ever.
I get it. You saved somebody's life or made their lives better in an extremely tangible way.
Yes.
And I would think that would be extremely rewarding. And I don't see anything wrong with saying that.
That was my biggest motive to continue.
Doctors are subject to a lot of ethics rules, right?
Humongous.
Yeah. There's the Code of Medical Ethics from the American Doctors Association, right? And that covers things like confidentiality, consent, standards of conduct.
Correct.
Stuff like that.
Yes.
I have a question for you about this. Mm. There's the Hippocratic Oath, right, which mandates that physicians give the best care possible and some other things.
Uh-huh.
Is the Hippocratic Oath something that is administered to you in school or when you take a job, or is it just kind of a accepted, binding, guiding principle of the profession?
Wow, Ben, for real. You're one of the first people who ever asked me this question. And it's a good question because it's a big myth, to be honest.
Mm.
I mean, it was something that I signed. I probably didn't read all of it, but I know the gist of it is like, okay, you're going to be a good person. You're not going to say anything that the patient tells you. You will work to get the patient. Like, I knew the concept. I don't think I even read it.
So it's basically just a paper you're given.
Exactly.
And was it at school or at work where you signed that?
No, that was at a school and it was very obvious. It didn't mean much. I don't think anybody around me read the paper. So
interesting. You'd think there would be at least a class devoted to it, at least, you know, a couple hours.
So ethics in medicine, it really starts being built as you're in medical school. And you get to some point where I can't tell you where I got this part from. Was it from a book or from a lecture? But it just get embedded in you. It's really weird. Like looking back, there is a lot of things that we do or we don't do ethically that just becomes a second nature because that's how it is.
Right. I get it. You're in the environment, you're in the profession, and a lot of the stuff you just take in and it develops as you mature as a doctor.
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay, so this is great. We're zeroing in on your secret. There have been a couple of clues here. I need to ask you, and this is just going to jump a little bit more into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was your experience with marijuana before becoming a doctor?
Oh.
Boom. Well, we've just unlocked a peek into Tim's secret, haven't we? And when Tim is faced with an unexpected requirement, everything goes sideways. Our story continues after the break.
I'll just jump quickly through how I grew up.
Okay, please.
When I was in school, I was basically like the perfect kid that parents would want. Just academically motivated on his own. They literally always told me, we never felt you growing up. Like you just got to medical school, and we didn't even need to tell you to do your homework or anything like that. So that was just how I was. College was the same. Alcohol wasn't really a big thing I wanted for some reason or another. I didn't like beer and wine, and I found out much later that I used to drink cocktails faster, so I didn't like how it made me feel. So I finished college with zero problems. In medical school, I would say midway in medical school, I had very close friends, maybe 8 or 10 of them. We were very close, like brothers and sisters. And they introduced me to marijuana. And in all honesty, and this part may sound like it's an advertisement for marijuana, but we loved it. We enjoyed it a lot. There were a lot of positive aspects that came with it. I remember paying as little as $3 and everybody else chipping in. And at the end of the day, somebody will go get enough for a week. And once we got high, we didn't really need to do anything. We just needed to put the latest Dire Straits album or go on the beach and lay on the sand and look at the stars and talk shit about our lives. That was it. We enjoyed it a lot. We ended up having a lot of what I call cerebral conversations. Like we come up with epiphanies and we discuss it all night long till 6 in the morning, and we think we discovered the whole world. And so it was innocent, fun, cheap, and yes, I enjoyed it a lot.
And you started enjoying marijuana recreationally about halfway through medical school?
Yeah, yeah.
Medical school is tough, right?
Yes.
Did you find that this helped?
So I was always really good about not mixing business with pleasure. Mm-hmm. So as long as I'm like in medical school and studying and everything, I'm basically just a student. But on weekends, that's when I used to smoke marijuana with my friends. That time made it feel like more of a work hard, play hard type of... That I like. I believe in work hard, play hard.
Okay. So you were using it responsibly and on the weekends and at times when it didn't interfere with your studies?
Yes, yes.
So when you went into residency, Tim, did you continue to use marijuana or did you put it aside at that time?
Okay, that is the beginning of the bigger story. I had some older residents who graduated, I mean, from medical school, went to residency. So I knew very well that they will do drug screening. So I had to stop it. By that time, I was smoking marijuana on and off for maybe a year and a half. So I knew I have to stop it way in advance. So I stopped it about 3 months before time to sign up with residency programs. And by the time I started my residency, I did drug screen and it was negative. And no, I could not.
You could not use it?
I was not like 100% sold on that's it. But two issues happened during my residency that made me, I'm like, uh-oh. Yeah, that's not going to happen. One of my co-residents, he stuck himself with a needle during a procedure.
Oh my God.
Which tends to happen at any time, but mostly in your first year as you're learning procedures and equipment and everything. So he stuck himself, and apparently that guy smoked marijuana at some point in the past, say, 2-3 weeks. I don't know exactly when. But he went to employee health. You have to go to employee health once you have a incident like this. They take your blood. They test it for HIV and hepatitis. They take the patient blood that you stuck yourself with his needle. And guess what? They asked him for urine drug screen.
Like, oh, boy.
Wait a minute. We did not know about that.
They asked for that at the time when he got stuck by a needle, but it doesn't seem like those two would be connected. You wouldn't expect that.
So I think it's more of a liability issue. If you were high doing the procedure, maybe employee health comp is not responsible for taking care of the, I think it's in this department.
Got it.
So he did, and he was positive. And that told me that anything can happen at any time, and I just can't do it.
Wow. What happened to your colleague who tested positive?
I would never be 100% sure. He was, I think, got probation for 2 weeks, then came, which doesn't sound like a big deal. However, you will have to report this for every hospital you apply for privileges till you retire.
Wow.
You will be 62-year-old going to a hospital applying, and you will have to say, yes, in my residency, I had a probation. Then they will get a paper from the residency. And they will probably need to talk to you about the incident that happened 35 years. It's crazy.
So that was a wake-up call for you.
Yeah, and I had another co-resident. She was pregnant, and I think she didn't know yet, but she passed out during a procedure, while she's performing a procedure. She passed out. And she too, they ended up testing her urine. I'm like, oh, okay, that, forget it. We're done here.
Oh my gosh. Was she positive for cannabis also?
No. Oh, okay. She was just pregnant and passed out.
Right. But you saw her get tested, have her urine tested also without expecting it. And so you're like, oh boy, okay, this could happen to me at any point.
Exactly.
Gosh.
And there were talks about, I didn't read the policies in my residency because, I mean, I decided early on that that's it. So I didn't need to pay close attention. But I think if you have a car accident, you need to come and report it. And they may, it's like, okay, forget it.
So did you give up the marijuana?
Absolutely. And I never had trouble stopping it. In fact, when I stopped it, I still went out with my friends who used to smoke marijuana. I just stayed away from the smoke. And we still had fun, so it didn't feel like, oh my God, I'm craving it, or I'm done.
Okay, good. So it didn't have a real impact. It didn't have an impact on your social life, and you didn't miss it too much.
Would I have loved to have some at some point? Yeah, but it was like winning the lottery. You just look up and you smile for 3 seconds, imagining, and that's it.
Did you have to have regular drug tests as a surgeon, or just... they just happened, you know, when these sort of incidents happened?
So every hospital have different set of rules. Definitely, if you have a adverse event like what I mentioned, or you came, somebody suspected that you're impaired and they report you, definitely. So that's in any hospital. Some hospitals, they did have random testing, and some hospitals, they didn't.
I see.
And again, the best way to deal with this is to tell yourself, well, I'll never do anything, so it doesn't really matter to me.
Right. Gosh. So, Tim, you told us earlier how, you know, your job was very stressful, and the responsibility of basically being on call, you know, 24/7, whether you're working or home with your shoes pointed toward the door so you don't waste a single second responding to an emergency call. Can you help illustrate that a little bit by maybe telling us about one night when you got called in and, you know, it was just touch and go and something happened and it was just so important that you were able to respond quickly and come out with a positive success?
So as a surgeon, you can be like you're on call for your patients and your partner's patients. But at some times I was also on call, not on call, meaning I have someone covering my service, but let's say a gynecologist doing a complete different procedure ended up with some mishap in the surgery that requires a general surgeon to come in and help, which happens often. I need a urologist, the urologist needs me, the gynecologist needs me, I need the gynecologist. That happens. And sometimes it's already planned. Like, I know I'm going to do this surgery, I'm going to need you. Or sometimes you're doing the surgery and you realize, I need Dr. So-and-so. The thing is, I'm not on call officially, but I have my friend. So that gynecologist friend, instead of calling whoever is on call, she just want to call Tim. Like, Tim, I know you're not, but please, would you? I'm like, sure. And again, you get there. And it was a bad case with really bad bleeding. The superior vena cava was completely almost torn away. And that case, we spent 4 hours just trying to control bleeding. And I think the patient got transfused with 26 or 30 pints of blood. And after the whole ordeal slowed down, and I couldn't come back home. I had to try to get a nap in the hospital. Half an hour later, we ended up going back for about the same thing. But all in all, at the end, it was okay. So that you would have like 10 hours go by, feel like 5 minutes.
Wow. Amazing. As you've been describing your job, obviously the years are going by, you're gaining more and more expertise and more of a footing in the hospital where you work. Did you work at the same hospital for your entire career as a surgeon?
Almost. I worked in, I would say, 3 hospitals altogether, but one of them was the most in my career, yes. The last one.
The last one. How long were you at that one?
I would say 12 years.
After 12 years at that last job, and I think we're probably at about 20 years as a surgeon, roughly speaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have just been going nonstop, and you've been stressed to the max, bearing all this responsibility. You decided to make a change, right?
Yes. So I actually, it was on the back of my mind all along. It's in the back of every 50-year-old doctor. I have no doubt. At least 95%. If they're listening, they're shaking their heads. I'm like, yep.
Right.
Thinking about it all the time. But it's really hard to make the jump. It's really hard because financially you kind of get yourself in that's what I make. Then you have the patient care part. You have, for some surgeons and doctors, they have the reward part from coming from the patients, and you have the ego part. There's a lot of variabilities, and most of the doctors who want to not continue in hospital patient care type business, they can't make a move. They're just so frozen. But I was lucky, the job came to me. So that's how it happened.
All right. So the change that you decided to make was to change jobs.
Yes.
And was the new job at the same hospital?
Oh, no. So the new job, the beauty of it is it has nothing to do with patient care, nothing to do with hospitals or clinics or clinical life at all. It is purely a desk job with computer and papers, and it is as beautifully boring as it can be.
That's great. Wow. You must have been like, I need this change.
I welcomed it, yes. There is no direct patient care. I'm not affecting Mr. John Smith case in specifically, but maybe affecting the general policies that a lot of other doctors will have their own opinion to use it. When you make a policy, the beauty of it is it's a guideline, but the physical clinical doctors in the field, they have their decisions to make.
I imagine you probably took a pay cut.
Yeah, almost 50% pay cut.
Wow.
Yes.
That's one of the big factors that you had to consider when making this change.
Absolutely.
Did that give you pause to give up, you know, all that money? I can't imagine cutting my salary in half.
It's really funny because whenever I thought of that, I figured, oh, there is no way I can do that. 50% is just, it's not doable. And then you get more stressed and more busy and more stressed and more busy to where I talked to my wife and decided, we're just going to do it. I'm like, what's going to happen? You know what really made me a little sad when I left my job and when I made this decision? It's ironic. I realized that the worst case scenario that either I don't do well in this new job or I don't like it, the worst case scenario is to come back to what I'm doing. Once you realize that what you're doing is the worst case scenario, it didn't feel right, but it was definitely enough to make me make the move.
Well, good for you.
I know. I'm happier. I'm much happier.
Good. Well, I'm happy for you. So in the past, when I've changed jobs, it's been a natural time to, you know, take a break and reset. You can take time off without decreasing your accrued leave. And also, you're going to make a big change in your life. And so, did you do anything like that?
That's a good question, Ben, because for 25 years, I lived from one job to the other.
Exactly.
Every doctor job has at least 90 days, up to 180 days of notice you have to give. I ended up actually one time overlapping, bridging, working in the old job and the new job.
Oh my God.
So for 25 years, I did not have more than a weekend between jobs.
So here's an opportunity to take a little more time.
Yeah, when I put in my 90 days, I made sure that I told the new job I'm going to start. It was almost 3 weeks. I would finish on a Wednesday and I will start Monday, like 2 weeks later. So almost 3 weeks off.
So you had a chance to relax and you were looking forward to that, I bet. You probably wouldn't know what to do with yourself.
I was elated. I was naturally high for about a month finishing the last job, knowing that I have 3 weeks off followed by no clinical care.
Right. Who needs the marijuana? You're on a natural high.
Oh my, exactly.
But you know what? It's funny you mentioned that. So obviously I need to ask. I mean, did you feel that urge to say, well, I got this time off. Maybe it's time to have some marijuana again. It's been a long time.
All along my medical career, really marijuana was not something that kept coming to my mind. But when they started legalizing it, I remember my wife and I, we went to Colorado, either 2014 or 15. It was already legal at that time. And we had another couple with us. And the three of them, my wife and the other couple, they bought gummies. And they ate gummies for 5 days in Colorado. And I was the only one who's not. That's when it really bothered me. That was the biggest time when it started bothering me that I can't smoke a joint or eat a gummy. And then next time, I forgot about it, of course, but next time it happened when my own state legalized marijuana. Mm-hmm. Now I can smell it everywhere. You can just walk and you keep smelling. I'm like, oh, guys, come on. Give me a
break. What torture?
Oh, my God. And a dispensary is less than half a mile walk from my house. It's just crazy. That when it really started bothering me. But, you know, THC, say I go to California for 5 days vacation and I eat maybe 8 gummies in 5 days. I could be positive 2 weeks later for THC.
Okay. And that's like the main psychoactive compound in cannabis that produces a high sensation.
Exactly. And that's what they test. And it depends on how much you used, how long ago, your body fat, a lot of other. It can stay for up to 3 months, for example. But if you're a daily user for years and you decide to stop, it can take up to 3 months to clear from urine. And God only knows how long it will take to clear from your hair, because it could be lifelong or something.
Wow. Okay.
It's actually one of my biggest discontent with this whole testing, because let me give you an example. A surgeon, for example, who drank 3 martinis last night, takes a Benadryl, tries to sleep, gets a phone call, wakes up, takes an Ambien, and goes next morning without sleep to perform a surgery. If you check their urine, it's completely okay. But he's impaired. The testing doesn't differentiate between impaired and intoxicated. If you haven't slept for 5 days, you're impaired. There is no doubt. I don't need any doctor to tell me that.
I'm a podcast host and I can tell you that.
Yeah, it makes sense. But if you take marijuana 2 weeks ago and it shows positive, that means something? That doesn't mean anything. It just means that my choice is not alcohol, is marijuana. That's basically what it means. The testing part was very unfair.
Well, maybe in your new job writing policy, that's something you can address.
Oh my God. Once they federally legalize it, it's just an uphill battle. Yeah, there's no way. But we'll see. So in that 90 days where I gave my notice, but I can't start till 90 days from now, I'm still doing the paperwork for the new job. Here is the W-4. We need copy of this, copy of that. You sign up for the payroll and all of that stuff, right? But then I get a phone call one day and she introduces herself as, I'm so-and-so, I'm from HR, from the new job. And we're going over your application. We have this, we have this, we have that. We need this and we need the urine drug screen. Sure, how do we do that? She will email me the form. The form will have a barcode. I go to almost any lab around. They have multiple contracts with labs. So basically any lab you go to, they will scan the barcode. They took my driver license. I go in, they empty your pockets in a locker. And then they send you in. They say you have 4 minutes to pee in the cup and pee in the toilet bowl as well. They want to see pee in the toilet bowl too. And they tell you not to flush and bring the cup out. Okay, so I go in, I do that. I come out as I'm washing my hand. She's doing something with the cup. Then she gives me a paper that says everything, you got it. And this is your receipt. All right, I do this, big deal. And about a month later, which is about a month before finishing the old job, I get another call. I pick up and some guy introduces himself as HR from the company. And he's asking for my urine drug screen. And I'm like, I did one about a month ago. He's like, oh, no, no, no. So the company I'm going to work for has a parent company. And the parent company, they have their own hiring process. And part of it is the urine screen. And they cannot use each other ones. So basically, I have to do it again. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess. And I go to the same place. I do the same routine. And done. Big deal.
Okay. So you're in your break, or you're about to go into a 3-week break.
Yeah. So my wife and I, we decide we're going to have a road trip. We will visit a few wineries on the way. We'll stay in bed and breakfasts, and we're going to have a wonderful week because she can only take a week off during my 3 weeks off. That was okay.
Okay.
But then we decided to buy a pack of marijuana gummies.
I knew it.
I knew it. So we bought it deciding that after I finish my last day, we can both do this together. So I was finishing on a Wednesday. She was finishing on a Friday. So I told her, of course, I'll wait. I waited 25 years. What's one more day, right?
Right.
So I finish on a Wednesday. I come back home really happy. I can still look back and remember how happy I felt. And we went to sleep. As usual, I couldn't sleep well. I mean, what you built in 25 years is not going to just disappear overnight. So I still woke up way too early, like 1-ish, 1 o'clock or something. Not unusual for me. That's usually when I listen to like podcasts like yours or something like that.
I approve.
I thought to myself, wait a minute. I can take a gummy.
Okay, right.
I mean, she's not going to be pissed off when I let her know later. So, like, yeah. I actually decided to eat half a gummy, but it was, like, so sticky and weird. I ended up just, you know, what's the big deal? I took the whole gummies at 10 milligrams. And I laid back in bed. I listened to music. And, oh, my God, the relaxation and the peace that I felt, I remember it was amazing how relaxed and peaceful and content I felt. And I ended up sleeping, of course.
It's my guess, though, that it had been decades since you'd felt relaxed like that.
Let me do a quick calculation. It's in the 25 years, definitely.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. That level of relaxation, you're right, actually. That level of relaxation, I don't think I've ever had in my clinical career in 25 years. Yes.
So you're feeling even more sure about your decision to change jobs.
Oh, my God, yes.
So what happened next?
Oh, man. So, okay. So I wake up, she wakes up, she goes to work. I decide not to bring it up in the 10 minutes before going to work. But I know her well. It wasn't going to be a big problem. I just didn't think that's the time for it. She goes to work. I go to service the car to prepare for the road trip and everything. And while I'm there waiting for the car, I get a phone call. And it says HR because I saved it. And she's very lovely and she introduces herself and she says, you're going to be starting soon with us. I'm like, yeah. She's like, okay, I'm going over everything. We have this, we have this, we have this. Oh, we're still waiting for your medical school transcripts. That is not going to hold anything. It usually takes time, but that's one of the things. And we need urine drug screen.
Again, a third time.
I heard that. Oh my God, I just felt the same chill I felt that day.
Your heart must have just fallen to the floor.
My entire body, the best way to explain it, I felt like I'm on ice. My entire body became ice.
I cannot imagine. You're like, damn, I just ate this gummy.
Okay, and about 500 million scenarios went through in front of my brain to pick one of them to talk to her about.
Right.
So what I said is, oh, I did too. She said, oh yeah, you did one for us and one for the parent company. However, ours was more than 30 days old. We need to have one that's within 30 days from the day of starting employment.
Oh my gosh, they could have told you that before, right?
They did not. So I'm going on a road trip, so I'm thinking maybe I should tell her. Because in my mind, I'm thinking it was one gummy. If you just give me like 3, 4, 5 days, that's all I need to clear it. So I told her I'm going on a road trip for a week.
Perfect.
She said, no, once they send me the email, which she already sent being on the phone with me, I have 48 hours to finish the test. And I have no excuse. I don't need to even print it. I can just take it on my phone. I can go anywhere in any zip code in the United States. They actually have other places all over the world that you can go to. So you can't even say, oh, I'm in Spain. No, you can still go somewhere there and get it done within 48 hours. Like, oh my God.
Tim, you are screwed.
I started saying things that made me look like, huh, maybe I'm looking a little more guilty here, so I should just shut up. So I said, okay, and I hung up. And I looked up to see if God is laughing, because I'm like, are you serious? Are you serious? 25 years, and literally the day I do it, I get a drug test?
Unbelievable.
I still can't believe, I mean, it's one of the things that I couldn't tell the story to anybody because it really sounds not real. It was.
It's amazing.
It was that day.
If you had only waited to eat the gummy after the urine test.
If I waited for my wife, yes. She's telling me this every day, yes.
Every day. Every day. Tim, if you had only waited on that gummy, just wait for me next time. Don't forget your wife.
I know. Oh my God. So I finished the phone conversation. It took me about 5 minutes of, that's it, I'm screwed, to texting my wife at her job. I told her, HR just called me from new job. They want a urine drug screen. She texted right back saying, perfect timing. Do it today. And she sent a wink, wink. Emoji.
Right, because that means good. We can enjoy the gummy tonight.
Exactly. Then I texted back, I ate a gummy last night.
Oh my God. What emoji did she send you back?
It took long 10 to 15 minutes for her to respond by saying, on my way.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, she's going to swoop into the rescue, it sounds like.
So she came home. I was already on iPad looking at whether I can cheat on the test or not. She came in. I told her the story quickly. She jumped on her iPhone and both of us are searching, is it doable? And if it is, what do we need to do? And how successful? And we both came to same conclusions. It is doable.
Okay.
As long as I have someone who would give me clean urine, like she volunteered.
Wow.
Okay, next step, we need Ziploc bags. We have these. Good. Next step, we need toe hand warmers.
Okay.
When you pee, your urine temperature is your body temperature. It's like, say, 97 degrees. And they test it. And if it's less than 90 or above 100, they reject the sample. So if she gave me the sample here at home, the test place is about 25-minute drive. By the time I get there, it will be cooler than 90. So people recommended that you attach a hand warmer to the Ziploc bag.
This is nuts.
So I'm like, okay, we need hand warmers. Guess what month it is? August.
Okay. Hard to find a hand warmer in August, probably.
Exactly. So we called around. We found that REI, they have it. I'm like, okay, we can drive there, get it later. We decided that she cannot give me the urine here at home and we drive 25 minutes. Then you go there and maybe you wait a little for other people. It's better to find a place that's close to the lab. That's where we're going to exchange the Ziploc bag. So on the way to go get the hand warmers, we realized that we're passing by a mall that has Dick's Sporting Goods.
Okay.
That's another outdoor place and sport. So I'm like, wait a minute, let's check there if they have the hand warmer so we don't have to drive all the way to REI. We check and they do have it. I bought four because we decided that we want to do it again and see how it works. So I got four of them. And we looked at drugstore that was close to the lab. And we found out that they do have bathroom and everything is working. So, okay, that's where we're going to do it tomorrow. We go back home and we get in business. She goes into the bathroom. She pees in the Ziploc. She rolls it, seals it, leaves it for me. She comes out, I go in, I wore the same underwear and pair of jeans that I was planning to wear tomorrow for the test. I put the Ziploc in the underwear and you come out. I attach the hand warmers, of course. I walk around, I sit down in the couch, I stand up, I sit down, I walk around, make sure that everything is looking normal. Then after 20 minutes or so, we test the urine and it was 97 degrees. I'm like, cool.
Wow.
It looks good.
So cloak and dagger.
I know. You can see my voice now. I'm like back into let's do it.
Right. So you repeated it?
Yes, we did it again at night and again in the morning because we were planning to go after lunch to do the test.
Wow. So you had three dress rehearsals.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, did the irony hit you at all here that, you know, you've spent an entire career guided by these ethics, the very ethics that we had discussed earlier? I don't know if they specifically talk about cheating on urine tests, but they talk about holding yourself to the highest professional standards. And it could be argued that this would, you know, violates those ethics.
You're right. It's not like I completely ignored this aspect. No, it crossed my mind in the sense that, first of all, I knew that I felt like I'm not doing anything wrong because a positive test does not represent who I really am. It didn't mean that, yeah, oh, he's using it every day. But there is no way for me, once it comes back as positive, to prove any of that. I even thought if that got out at some point, maybe my previous job will look back at any event and decide, ah, wait a minute, maybe he was high when that happened.
I would be so scared. I might even just have withdrawn my application for the other job because, like you said, getting caught could be disastrous for you.
But then what do you do? You can't go. I mean, I don't think I could have gone back to my job who I just left a day ago after 90 days of just looking smiley and happy that I'm leaving and everybody's right. like, come on, don't do this to us.
Right.
Now what? Now I'm turning back and saying, that doctor you started trying to hire for my place, can we cancel that and I get back?
So you've made the decision just to go forward, just do it.
Yeah. I mean, between my wife and I talking about it,
okay,
it sounded like that's the best option we have.
Right.
Oh, God.
So what happened the next day?
So we are on the way. She's driving. We're going to the drugstore so she can pee, and I get the Ziploc bag. She goes in there. She pees. Mind you, I have also to be prepared to pee because once I get to the place, I need to pee in the toilet bowl.
Right.
Right. So both of us are synchronizing our water intake.
Right.
And she pees in the bathroom. She brings me the Ziploc. I attach the hand warmer. I put it in my underwear. I zip up the jeans and we go to the car. And once I get to the car, I realize, wait a minute. So I practice sitting and standing in couch, but that move to extend your leg inside the car to get sideways into the car, mm-hmm. that I have not practiced.
Okay. Huh.
Well, just gonna have to do it slowly. I did it. I got into the car. She drove half a mile. We got to the lab. I got out. We give the thumbs up to each other. I walk in. There were about 5 people waiting, so they told me to write my phone number. They took my license, they scanned it or took a copy or whatever, and they scanned my barcode, so I'm registered there. And they will text me once I'm ready, so I don't have to wait inside. So I come out and I'm looking at my wife sitting in the car, and she's waving at me to come quick, like, come, come.
Oh gosh.
And I'm like, what the heck? I go there and she says, get in the car, you're leaking.
Oh my God, killing me.
I look down and I look like I just peed myself.
Oh, God. Okay. Did you have a spare pair of pants?
How about spare pair of pee?
What am I thinking? What am I thinking? That's the most important thing.
She just peed.
You've lost your supply.
So now I'm wearing a pant that's soaked in urine. She just peed. We don't have more hand warmers. We used all of them.
And you probably need a new bag too.
Yes. Home is 25 minutes. So going and changing and back is an hour. And they're going to start texting me in 5-10 minutes. And I gave up. I told her, fuck it. I'll just use my urine. I'm like, positive, positive. It's what I did. That's it. What else can you do? In 2-3 minutes talking about this, we both got to the point, I'm like, heck no, we're not going to go down without a fight.
Okay, all right. So there's a plan B.
Plan B.
I can't even imagine.
Quick, okay. quick. Okay. The mall we went to, Dick's Sporting Goods, is 10 minutes from here. On the way, we're going there. We're looking for cash. She goes into Dick's Sporting Goods to get the hand warmers. And on the way, she will find one of these vending machines to get like 2 bottles of water. I go into JCPenney straight to the jeans area. In 3 minutes, I find a pair of jeans that look exactly like I peed them. Same color. I know my size. I take it. I pay for it. I know that people are looking at me. I don't care. I go to the bathroom of the mall. I change the pants. I put the new one and I put the old one in the bag, the soaked one. We meet in the car. She has the water. She has the hand warmers. She's drinking. The problem is, while I'm changing my pants in the bathroom, being in the bathroom and having all this water I just drank, I had to pee. I tried everything I couldn't.
Oh my gosh.
Being in the bathroom and so full like this, I couldn't hold it. So now she's drinking and I'm drinking. And we go drive back towards the lab and we stop by a grocery store so she can pee and we exchange the Ziploc again. She goes there and she can't. It's still too early. She can't pee.
Oh my gosh.
We go back to the car. Both of us are still drinking water. And I've already gotten at least 4 or 5 texts from them that they're ready for me. So I'm not even sure what I'm going to tell them when I get back, but one step at a time.
Right, right. Your heart must have been racing.
My heart is racing right now.
Mine too. Oh my gosh.
I cannot tell you anything was around me that day, completely focused on the problem. But we find a parking lot that's kind of remote, very close to the lab, and we park there. And I turn my iPhone on one of these water running music. You just hear water running and water for...
Just to relax here.
No, that helps people pee. Like if you really want to pee, you want to listen to water and preferably put your hand in cold water too. That will make you pee.
Okay, I'll remember that.
Oh yeah. I put this on and she's relaxing and we're talking about, okay, we've gave it our best. Whatever happens, happens. That was as much as anybody could do in this situation. She ends up peeing in the car, in the Ziploc. I take it, I attach the hand warmer, I carefully put it in the underwear, and we go back to the lab, and I walk in, and she's like, oh, here he is. And I'm like, oh, sorry, I had to pee, I couldn't wait, I had to pee, and I had to drink water again, so it took some time. And they didn't say anything.
Okay.
They took me in, I did the same routine, I come out, give her the cup, now I'm washing my hand, and for the first time, I'm paying attention to what she's actually doing, checking temperature, and then she gives me the same paper I always got. I'm like, you're done.
Oh my gosh.
I walk out with the paper in my hand so my wife can see it for a thing, because she knew there will be a paper that I'll come out with.
Okay.
I had a smile on my face and the paper in my hand, and I can see in her face like, oh my gosh.
How, Tim, I can't imagine the feeling of elation and relief you felt at that moment.
At that point, it was exhaustion. It was, I'm just exhausted. I wish I can lay in the back of the car and sleep.
Did you feel the urge to go home and just have a whole bunch of gummy bears?
Oh, God, no.
At that point.
Actually, no. What's sad is it really turned me off. Because it just, this is too much coincidence. Like, come on.
It was so unnecessary.
Yeah. And I was going to jeopardize something really big for something that's really stupid.
Yeah.
I'm like, there is no way I will do it unless it's federally okay. And they find the test that actually says whether you are high now or you had a gummy 2 weeks ago. Till then, I'm not interested.
Wow. So your wife was happy, you're happy, you go home, you relax. And did you go on the trip then, or were you just too frazzled?
That was Friday. We started our trip on Sunday. So we had a couple of days to just, it was really painful. It was like coming out of a boxing match or something. I felt so exhausted for 2 days, so exhausted.
Such an adrenaline rush.
I think so. It was the same day I ate the gummy. Oh my God.
So you got through it, right?
Yes.
There was no repercussions. Nobody ever knew a thing. Only you, your wife, and now the Podverse.
Exactly.
You probably had an even better time on your trip than you would have otherwise, because you just had this tremendous relief and you just knew things were going to be okay now.
We were celebrating at least 3 things at the same time. Finishing my clinical career and getting the new job and passing this urine test.
What a story, Tim.
Tell me about it.
I cannot even imagine. You know, I think this might be a good point to check in with you and ask you, you know, is there anything to be learned from this?
I learned that it's not worth it. That's what I learned.
The what's not worth it?
Doing something like marijuana where you can get caught, and getting caught is going to mean possibly losing your job. If it's that much at stake, it's not worth it.
You had a lot on the line.
Exactly.
A lot on the line.
Yes, yes.
Right. So what would happen if your current job found out that you had cheated on your urine test?
I will gently remind them that I did two before that one.
Right. And they were fine.
But is it a fact that I cheated on that test? Yeah, it is a fact.
So how long have you been in the job now?
3 years.
And looking back over the last 3 years, do you feel you made the right decision to leave your job as a surgeon for this new policy position?
1,000,000%.
Oh, that's great. And your position is kind of a senior one, right?
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. I'm, you know, so delighted this worked out for you.
Oh, I couldn't be happier, and life is much different. And I always remind myself and remind my wife that we would not enjoy what we have now unless we've seen the other side. So you can't say, oh, I wish I did this earlier. Or no, you have to go through it to understand how it feels now.
I understand. Good. Well, Tim, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Oh, thanks, man.
What a ride.
Oh, my God.
You got to live it all over again. How does it feel?
Did my voice change? Because at some times I felt my heart rate is racing and my eyes are getting wider.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I didn't notice. I was glued to your story. I mean, wow.
And now it's time to just get my passport and escape the country before.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Believe it or not, Tim and I recorded this interview almost a year and a half ago. It's been embargoed since then to give him a little cover with his new job. And guess what? Things have changed. They still require a drug test for employment, but they no longer screen for cannabis. I told Tim that was great, and he just said, bastards. He also said that initially he was angry when he found out, because everything that he went through was so unnecessary. But ultimately, he's happy for new people getting hired. But for Tim, the timing could have been better. Tim sent a picture for us.
The paper you get after you finish a urine test.
The results of Tim's successful screening are a reminder of that fateful day. I've also got pictures of the lab and the sporting goods store. Check social media with the handle @SecretRoomPod.
On the next Unlocked, we're joined by a woman who's a professional cleaner for her day job, but shoplifts so much it's part of her regular budget to support her family. She has no intention of stopping. Hear the rest in just 1 week. Also, Alice from Mother of Accusations joined me on Unlocked with her stepmom for an eye-opening perspective we didn't hear in Ben's interview. It's out right now. I'm your guide, Susie Lark. Subscribing to Unlocked is a great way to support the show and to get a little extra secret room in your life. Check out the options at patreon.com/secretroom.
You can also support the show by supporting our sponsors, see their offers, and submit your secret at secretroompod.com. We're going to kick off the new year with a blockbuster. Esteban's going to tell us all about the prison riot started by a fellow inmate who trusted him with his money. But was Esteban all that trustworthy? Join me for the next edition of your favorite indie podcast that could, The Secret Room. It drops in just 2 short weeks. Our music is by Breakmaster Cylinder.
This is The Secret Room, a podcast about the stories no one ever tells.
Thank you for downloading. I'm Ben Hamm.
Pod on, Ben.
Pod on, Tim.
Pod on, Ben.